Brighter Media Group original.
Welcome to Your Day Brighter, the podcast. I'm your host, Tracy Tiernan. Before we jump in, I just want to thank our sponsors, J29 Inc., innovators with the right solutions for your business, and a company that is committed to giving back to the community. Connect with them. Go to j29inc.com.
I don't know what snap. Okay, hold on. Give me 2 seconds. I don't know what that is. I can do this. I'm smarter than my computer, I think.
That is the voice of Bart Millard of Mercy Me. Hey, I'm Tracy. I am so glad that you're joining me for this episode of Your Day Brighter, the podcast. What an honor to speak with a lead singer, Bart Millard of Mercy Me. He's written some of my most favorite songs in the world, and just such a wonderful man and such a gracious dad. You know, when you're trying to do interviews and...
Well, Snap Camera is a thing, like a Snapchat filter my kids have put on my computer. So I'm going to erase that. It should go back. I don't know why it's going to that by default.
Just a little bit of real life, chatting it up with Bart Millard from Mercy Me. I'm going to call this episode Bart Millard Unfiltered. You got the filter problem solved. And then we had a really great conversation about how Bart was able to navigate this pandemic with his family, what he learned about what's most important in life, and really even how those creative juices were flowing. And he got to share some of that with his son. We've got a great conversation to share with you. I hope that you will share it with somebody that needs to hear it. It is my honor to introduce you to some just really cool people in the world that are doing great things. Here we go. Let's jump in. Bart Millard of Mercy Me, Unfiltered. It's good to see you, Bart.
Yeah, it's good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing great. I love the background. That beautiful. Is that a
sweater
behind you? Where are you?
It's my back porch. Yeah, we had it screened in and put like these garage doors on it so we could open it up and use it during the winter and summer and stuff. So yeah, it's the only place I can get away from my 5 kids. So it's and the weather's awesome out here.
What's it like right now? What's today like? Is it getting warmer?
It's perfect right now. It's like in the low 70s we've had so much rain, so we're just glad. This week so far, we've been okay. So it's been like, it's hard not to be outside the whole time.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to ask you first and foremost about the pandemic and how have you fared through this pandemic? Were there some things that you wouldn't mind keeping in the new normal and some things that you can't wait to get back?
Yeah, there definitely. I mean, we've had a few meetings about it, you know, the beginning of the pandemic, you know, once we got past just the worry of what in the world is happening. And for us, we kind of had to sit down and have a game plan of like, okay, this is, you know, like, this is how far we can go financially. And this is the, you know, and making sure we can take care of our crew and all these guys and time off. And once we got a place where we kind of had a plan, we were kind of able to, you know, exhale for a second and then at some point just, you know, I have 5 kids and, you know, got acclimated to some days the most important thing I'm going to do that day is figure out what flavor ice cream I'm eating with my 11-year-old daughter and that was amazing. Was that, you know, it's very bittersweet of like, you know, I hope that we never go through a pandemic again, but at the same time I'll never get this kind of time with my kids at this time in their lives. And thoroughly enjoyed it. I know that it's been tough for so many people. We had COVID over Christmas, but thankfully it was very mild. We just decided, you know what, we're in it regardless whether we want to be or not. So we're going to make the best of it. And to the point to where I remember having a meeting with a band around Thanksgiving going, hey guys, the good news is we're going to make it through this. We're going to be okay. The bad news is, you just proved to me that we can make it without doing a single show in a year. And so I really love being home. And so we decided that once we kind of get back to where we're financially in a good place, we'll probably cut back and do only about 40 shows a year and just, and be home more and kind of be, you know, pick and choose our shows a little better. Cause you know, you do fall into the trap of just, if somebody asks, you just say yes. Cause you know, you don't know how much longer they're going to ask. And I'm like, yeah. And I kind of had that mentality, but then I was like, you know, but I do know that my kids are getting older and they're not going to be here that long. And so I think I'm going to lean on that side. And so, yeah, so it's been very revealing of just that fear of we can't stop working. And then when we are forced to stop and realize, hey, we're going to be okay. Like it can't get worse than this, right? We're going to be okay. And so it's definitely changed our priorities, which I think for the better by far.
I love that reshuffling the priorities, I think, is something that a lot of people experienced during the pandemic. Yeah. Was there ever a fear like, oh no, I don't have any place I have to be today, or I don't have anything to produce or create today? You know, like, did that ever like make you feel like a little, I want to say inadequate? I think sometimes people feel like when they're so used to cranking out stuff and then all of a sudden they don't have to be, it's like, it's just me. And is that enough?
Yeah, we were very careful and very proactive in that because, you know, the album was supposed to release spring of 2020. And gosh, like our first single is Almost Home, which is going to be a year and a half old by the time the album comes out. And so when the pandemic hit, we knew the label wasn't going to release an album if we weren't touring. And so we knew it was going to be pushed back. So we kind of wiped the slate clean and started rewriting and intentionally to have something to do and something to go to every day. We just bought a cabin we made in the studio a couple of years ago. So we had this place where we could leave everything set up and just come and go. So, you know, this album took a little over 2 years to make and we spent, you know, a lot of time in the pandemic. It felt about as normal as it could, other than touring. When we're making an album, we would spend all of our time in the studio. And so it kind of fell right into place and we ended up writing like over 40 songs wow. Yeah, it saved us, I think, you know, because there is, whenever you finish an album, I'm sure like any big project, there's that weird kind of post-depression, like it's like the day after Christmas. It's like, yeah. Oh man, what do I do now? End of a tour, end of an album, it never fails. And I just assumed that would be really bad during the pandemic. So we stretched it out until, you know, the end of this past February is when we kind of wrapped up the record so that kept us sane because of we had such a fear of going down that rabbit hole of, you know, depression or whatever. Just, you know, we just needed something to do. And so we tried to plan ahead as much as possible. We are excited. We're a little nervous because we've never set on an album without anybody hearing it for this long. Like it's so funny. We joke around about it. I feel like I'm standing in front of the mirror going, man, I hope they think I'm pretty or whatever. But yeah, it's just weird not getting feedback throughout, because normally we'd write songs and even get feedback through the process. But we literally locked ourselves up and just, other than our family members, just kept making music until we lifted our head and was like, okay. Then we had 40 songs to figure out what the first album was going to look like. And so, yeah, I'm very excited, but also, you know, I mean, I'm not really anxious. I'm just excited for feedback. I hope, you know, we put our heart and soul in it, and we changed the album title to Inhale Exhale, and the cover's like this kind of artwork of a set of lungs. And we just want it to be kind of a snapshot of the season that we're going through and just give people a chance to, you know, to take a deep breath and just kind of remember what's important. And so we're, you know, when you do this for a living, it's like you when you have something to say, you want people to hear it. And since we can't tour, that's the hardest part, because normally we'd be on tour and we would try out a few songs and see how they respond. And well, nothing. It's just, we've got this album and we think it's important to us. And so we hope people like it.
I bet you can't wait to get back out there full speed ahead and be in front of audiences again. But you were pretty innovative in finding ways of getting out there. I saw that you did something called, was it called the Showtel?
Yeah, the Showtel. We got a phone call. We were, a lot of different artists are doing these drive-in movie theaters and just anything they could do to kind of stop the bleeding financially. And we were, you know, I mean, thank God that for the success of the movie, enough things happened to where we knew there are so many of our friends that are musicians that are just trying to make ends meet, that we decided we have a record to make and we can kind of stay out of the way. And so we decided not to do any shows for a year. And then we just, we were trying to figure out like, you know, when is this going to come to an end? Trying to come up with, we try to do stuff that's like, not necessarily a first, but like any new idea, we're willing to give it a shot, even if it fails. And, and so our, a promoter buddy of ours, he had some businessmen from Canada had this idea up there to where they would, you know, if you go to like a resort and there's a pool and you have the pool side, the rooms that are, have the view of the pool.
Yeah.
They would set up a stage where the pool is, and every box, every balcony became their own box seats where you check in at 4 and the show's that night and you stay the night in your room, get rooms or however isolated you want to be. It was like the ultimate social distancing, and they just sat on the balcony and we play for them. And they had huge success with just a cover band in Canada. So they wanted to try it in the US, and they called this promoter that's like kind of a business partner for us. And he's like, hey man, you know, like they want to try it with like a Reba McEntire, Luke Bryan. And that's always been like, man, try it on us first. Let's figure it out, because we just have a blast doing that. And so we played at the Ritz-Carlton in Amelia Island outside of Jacksonville. And it was incredible. Like, it was so funny because like the weather was terrible. It was like 49 degrees, 30 mile an hour winds. It was raining.
Oh my gosh.
And nobody cared. They were just so happy to be there that they could care less. In fact, some thought it was even better because it was like, you know, they were just so starving for community and just to see live shows again. And so I thought it was going to be a train wreck. And then it was like, it turned out to be really, really cool. And I don't know if at one point we talked about doing more of them, but it's been hard to explain to hotels what we're trying to do. And, you know, even though they're like at 20% capacity, they were like, well, wait a minute, we're giving up our best rooms for this and a discounted rate so we can keep the price point as low as possible. We're like, yeah. So we're all winning. You have people in your hotel, and it was an uphill battle every hotel we would do. And so we were like, we felt like it might be even harder when things start opening up, when, you know, and so we're like, you know what, it's just chalk it up as another thing that came out of this season that was amazing, and we'll have that. We may do some more. Ritz-Carlton totally got it. They want to do a ton of them. Wow. So you never know, but they were a blast to do. And I would, man, if it was my favorite artist, whether there's a pandemic or not, I would love to take my wife and sit on a balcony and watch. And so, so there may be room for it. We'll see. I thought it was a cool idea.
I loved it. I saw just a little clip that you did on Instagram of it, and totally caught the vibe. Like, it just seemed like it was so exciting. People were really into it. There's lights that are flashing everywhere. And we were just so hungry for beauty and music and togetherness, you know, any creative way that we could bring people together. Can you tell me, just reflecting back on this past year, what has been for you personally, like some really beautiful moments of togetherness that you forged, maybe with your family or friends around a table, something that became more meaningful because of the restrictions and the limitations, because you couldn't go out beyond your walls much?
Board games.
We
have played more cards and more board games, and we just, because we knew, you know, video games are a huge part of my kids' life, and it's so easy. And we were already, you know, when you're so busy, it's so easy to, you know, step, you know, jump on your phone, or the kids do this. And it's more like, okay, nobody's complaining. So there's a moment's peace, and, you know, these devices become your babysitter. And, you know, sometimes it's okay when, you know, it's like everybody needs a pacifier at some point. But man, when this thing was going, it was like, my wife set up a thing where we put all of our devices like in a basket by the door. And it was like, first it was a game night, and then it became game week, and then it became game month. And it was like, to where every night at a certain time, you know, if we didn't play games, you know, they were like, hey, what's going on? And so we created a really cool habit that they knew, look, it's time to shut things down and just sit around the table. And it's funny, 'cause like, you know, some of my kids will be upstairs doing their thing, and then my Sophie, my 11-year-old, she's a people person. And so like we noticed like there'd be times where all the kids are upstairs doing a thing, and Shannon and I would have the downstairs to ourselves. But man, Sophie was down there with us nonstop. She's like an old soul. And she was like, whatever you guys are doing, I'm in. And that was so much fun. There's, you know, everything about family, you know, with five kids, there's never less than seven of us. So whoever talked about getting alone time, I didn't see any of that, but it was, It was, I honestly, I was like, thank God for a big family, because I feel for people that are on their own, or, yeah, you know, just in, you know, and having to be locked up. And we leaned on each other heavily, and it's moments I wouldn't trade for the world.
That's so beautiful. What's your favorite board game, Bart? And did you want to like teach your kids like some of the old classic ones? You know, are we talking about Monopoly or Scrabble?
We tried them all. Honestly, like I'm a little bit of a Yahtzee junkie.
Okay.
And then my kids introduced me to a card game called Dutch Blitz that I've never heard of. Do you know that game?
Oh yeah.
Oh man, there'd be some fist fighting if we're not careful, because it's like we don't. It's so fast. We move the chairs and stand around like we're at a dang casino trying to play those cards as fast as we can. We have played that a million times, like literally like smack talking until the next night. And I can't beat my 11-year-old daughter. I know she's cheating. I just can't prove it yet.
You have cuts and scrapes on your hand.
Oh my gosh. That game it's stressful, man. I can't keep up with all the different cards. Oh yeah. Don't get me started. I'm always in.
Telestrations, Bart, have you ever played Telestrations?
I don't think I have.
Oh, you haven't heard that one yet? So it's kind of like a drawing game. You guys might really enjoy it. We have six kids, and whenever we're all together, Telestrations, you draw a card that tells you something you have to draw, and then you pass it to the person next to you, who then has to try to guess what that is. They write down what they think it is in the word, then pass that to the next person, who then has to draw that. And so the idea is eventually you get
to try to get the same picture if you can.
Yeah, it's hilarious. It's hilarious. You guys will like
brilliant.
That.
Yeah. All right, so, I got plans tonight now.
Yes, you gotta get Telestrations. Speaking of your kids, I watched your lyric video to your new song On Our Way. That's so beautiful. First of all, that song is so full of hope. It's so full of hope for people in every season of life, you know, that God's given us everything that we need. Let's go. You know, it's such a beautiful, hopeful song. I love it. And your son, Sam, is singing on it.
It's crazy to think that I was in a band when we had Sam, and now I'm still in the band and Sam's old enough to be singing with me. It's like it's a very proud dad moment. And he, the first time he was probably, he's 19 now, he was 15. We moved to Nashville when he was 12, and he was really depressed, you know, because we moved from Dallas and leaving his friends. It was a hard time at that age. And we got him guitar lessons, and that became his best friend. So I knew he was learning to play guitar and really good at it, but I didn't know he could sing. He would never let me hear him sing. Oh. And it wasn't until he was 15 and I was laying in bed, and my wife, we just kind of let him have an Instagram account, and my wife's listening to this person sing on the phone. I'm like, man, that's really good. Who is it? Like, it was genuinely good. Like, I would buy the record, and she goes, that's your son. And I just started sobbing immediately. And so, hey, hold on a second. Get out of here. Let my dog out. So, yeah, sorry. I'm sorry. Anyway, but yeah, so I was like, what in the world? And so we started I just kind of kept encouraging him and said, man, you know, I put him in touch with some people that, you know, that are just like, hey, work on songwriting, you know, that kind of stuff. And he wrote this chorus for, with a couple of guys for On Our Way. It was supposed to be for like an American Idol commercial. There's these publishing companies that'll call and say, hey, for a couple $100, we'll, you know, submit your song. And it's kind of a scam. Like, it's like, they're getting these great songs for nothing. But there's enough starving artists out there that they do it. So Sam was like, man, I wrote this chorus. We're going to try to get on American Idol. It's going to pay $200. And I was like, okay. And when I heard it, I was like, man, this is a really good chorus. And so I let the guys hear it just because I was proud of it. And in my label, they heard it. And it was me showing off Sam, not really the song. And they were like, hey, this song should be on Mercy Me's record. Like, let him really like be a songwriter and like make a little bit more than $200 writing the song. And it was a really weird feeling, because I was like, oh, great. So I'm about to have a conversation of, hey, daddy loves your song. Now daddy wants to take your song, is what it felt like. And it was funny, because he was reluctant, because in his head, he was like, I want to record this. I want to make an album. This is what I want to do one day. And
wow.
And it was like, you know, and just, it was one of those moments of, hey, trust me when I tell you, like from experience, like, you know, if you made a record right now, it would be no sooner than a year from now. And those first songs you write are always the first ones that you cut because they become old to you. And you're gonna write some of their songs. And it wasn't a pitch trying to get it. I was just saying, look, buddy, I was like, you have your whole future ahead of you. It's like from a financial standpoint and the opportunity, whether I'm in the band or not, it's like any songwriter would jump at the opportunity to be on Smirch Me record.
Hey, it's Tracy. I'm going to jump in here for just a moment. I can't wait for you to hear the rest of Bart's story. What happens when his son, Sam, has a really great song that they're thinking about putting on the Mercy Me record? Well, something special happened, and maybe kind of by accident. We'll get right back to the story in just a moment, but I want to thank our sponsors that are making this podcast possible. It's J29 Inc. Now, this amazing company, they can do so many things to help your business. They're innovators with leading experts in technology and processes, and they can help you with everything from staffing, data analysis, Medicare claims, health and human services. But you know, the thing that really impresses me the most about J29, it's their commitment to their people and to their community. Tracy Mills, awesome lady, she founded her company on the principle in her favorite scripture, and it's Jeremiah 29:11. This is one of my favorites too, where the Lord says, I know the plans I have for you, plans to give you hope and a future. This is what drives Tracy in her business at J29. It's giving hope to people by giving back to the community. She tithes J29's earnings back to nonprofits that align with her company's values each month. Strengthening the community is a pillar of J29, and we are so proud to have them be a part of the Your Day Brighter podcast. I think these folks are amazing. You want to reach out and find out more about J29 services? Reach out to Tracy. Connect with them at j29inc.com. And now let me jump back into our conversation with Bart Millard, lead singer of Mercy Me. And Bart, catching us up on the creativity, the amazing things that happened during this pandemic, writing 40 songs that were going to be on their album. And then here comes another song, Out of the Blue, submitted by his son, Sam. Let's jump back in.
And so originally it was me singing his song, and the other writers, of course, they wanted it to be on the Mercy Me record. And so the coolest part was when I went in, I helped him finish the verses, and I was trying to sing a demo to let the label hear what it would sound like finished out. Well, my voice was shot. I was so sick that day. Mm. And so I had him finish the back half of the song. I was like, look, I got the first part. I can't go anymore. You know it. Sing the back half. That's plenty. We'll let them hear it. And we finished the demo, took it to the band and the label, and they were all like, I don't think we should take Sam off the song. And I was like, hey, there's no way I would never suggest that, because I just didn't want to be that guy pushing this on the guys. But, you know, man, they all feel like they're they're all dads of his or uncles. And yeah. And they were like, man, he should be on. It's so good. And I was like, you think so? And so they really had to talk me into it. And then I was super excited, because it knocked two issues out. Like, not only is he on the record, which I'm proud of, but he got to sing on it and be featured. And it was an interesting conversation, because years ago we would do all these big shows, and a manager convinced us to. He would always sing the song Because He Lives. It was like his first thing he learned on guitar. So my manager convinced us to let him come out and sing the song in front of 10,000 people, and he killed it. And wow. So there's been a handful of times, like we played the Red Rocks and he got to play the song, and you know, and our fans are so gracious, and he really is talented. Yeah. And so a couple of record labels started calling saying, hey, we want to sign your son. And he was maybe 16 or 17. And I told him, no, I wouldn't let him. And he finally was like, what's the deal? Like, why are you keep telling him no? And I said, look, buddy, I said, you know, I've only got a couple more years before you're making your own decisions. But until then, I was like, man, you know, you're just figuring this stuff out. And the second you step on stage, they're going to expect you to have something to say. And if you don't know what you're going to say, then there's a chance you're going to hate Jesus in like 5 years, like a child actor or something like that. And I said, just enjoy music, just be in love with it, because it will eventually become a job, and you'll have to try harder to stay in love with it. And just Man, it's just it. This is the best time to just genuinely love music. And he totally received it. He was like, cool. Like, he never argued with me, never said, why not? And even to this point now, to where he's 19 and people are asking, like, especially with knowing that the song's coming out and the song turned out great, he's getting people asking again, like, okay, what's going on with Sam? What's he going to do? And Sam's like, I'm not ready for that. Like, and it's told him, because, you know, my dad and I will talk about it or whatever. And I'm like, oh, he does listen to me for something at least. So it's been a cool journey. And he's, gosh, yeah, I couldn't be prouder. Like, he is 10 times more talented than I was that age, no question.
Seriously, wow. His voice, it just made me lean in and like, wow. So I'm so intrigued by what you shared, that you didn't want him to miss the joy of just loving music right now. Without all the added pressure of having to have all these things figured out, and even just keeping his faith intact. Was that a struggle for you? I mean, you've been in the business for such a long time. Was it hard for you to protect your vibrant relationship with God and your deep love for music with all the pressure to have to be Bart of Mercy Me and to keep producing this great music?
Yeah, I mean, of course. Like, I mean, and we've done it for 27 years. And so, yes, we've had our highs and lows. And fortunately, at his age, like, you know, I didn't have a dad that had success in the music business. So I wasn't getting opportunities to sing at Red Rocks and stuff. I was like wanting anyone to hear what I had to say, even though I didn't know what I had to say. I wasn't thinking that far ahead. I just wanted the opportunity. And so learned a lot of things the hard way. And that was the thing with Sam, was like, you know, I'm very aware that you are getting opportunities that most people don't get. And, you know, and I don't want you to take it for granted. I want you to assume this is the way it is. But also, man, this is a random story, but I grew up in Dallas, and I remember when Deion Sanders came to know Jesus, the football player, and like TBN or somebody, they had him on stage. It felt like the same night or the night after, like, oh, get him on stage, let him start preaching. And he admitted, he's like, I had no clue what I was talking about. I knew I loved Jesus, but half the stuff I said and did, you know, the fame side of that. He goes, even though I'm used to, you know, being this big football player, it was intoxicating to where and I was like, man, I totally get that. And I didn't want that for my son. And yeah, of course, like, you know, my manager Brickle, who I've had from day one, like, one of the best advice he ever gave me was, there's plenty of room at the top. There's not much more room at the bottom. And his whole point was that he was like, man, it's, I can handle failure. Okay. Success is harder. Because, my neighbor he's a recovering, gambling, what do you call it? Addicted to gambling, whatever. And he said, man, he goes, losing, I can do that just fine. But when you win, that's when it's scary. Cause it's like, I can win again. And so, man, yeah, when Imagine was our first kind of big hit early on, there was this pressure of keeping the machine moving. Don't blow it, follow that up. And then our staff, everybody, the crew around us got bigger, and this responsibility of their livelihoods were on my shoulders, what it felt like. And then you stop being creative and you just start maintaining, and you start like, how can I write another Imagine? And that's just a horrible place to be. And it'll suck you dry after a while. It may be what fans want, but just personally, it's like, man, I need to stretch myself. And so to a point to where I just, you know, there's probably hurting the healer. I actually tried to quit. I was just so, I was done. It was like, felt empty. It felt corporate. It felt nothing. And I was understanding my identity in Christ and realizing that what I do is not who I am, especially with Mercy Me. And just really thought I was to a point to where I was probably healthier than I ever had been, and was realized, okay, if the band breaks up tonight, I genuinely, for the first time, won't lose sleep. I'll be okay with that. And actually I'll kind of be free of some stuff, to be honest. And when I approached the band, we realized we were all in the same boat, and we were like, how do we fix what's broken? And I remember going to my wife going, because, you know, Mercy Me became the villain that took daddy away from home, and it was never meant to be that way. And I kind of sat down with my wife and said, I'm ready to call it. But I mean, they're asking like, how do we fix this? Is it worth it? And so we like, okay, we want to cut our shows in half. We had all these kind of crazy like asks, like realizing there's no way it's going to happen. And they were like, okay, cool. Let's go from 150 to 60 shows a year. And and do all this stuff. And they were all, we were all there, just didn't talk about it much. And what's crazy is when all these, one, to show that, to see that they were willing to do anything to make it better for our families was an amazing, it did wonders for our relationship. Not that we were ever struggling. I mean, they're my best friends and always have been. But what happened was when we kind of stepped away and realized that this fear that if we slow down, we're going to get passed up, or, you know, we need to jump on the opportunity. When we stopped thinking like that, we fell in love with music again. And like, we felt like we were in a garage band, you know, teenagers or whatever again. And just, and we, my wife would say in a healthy way, we stopped caring what radio thought we should do and what the best business move is. And we just got back to just making music that made us dance or that made us smile or whatever. And the second that we stopped caring, we started making, you know, I think Welcome to the New would be the first album that came out after that. And it was just like a breath of fresh air for us. And so we jokingly say after 27 years, we're just about to release our third album is what it feels like, because everything before was from a different place. And
wow.
And now it's the most amazing. We're in the most amazing place now and having the time of our lives. And, you know, part of the reason the album took 2 years is because we weren't in any hurry, and the pandemic, obviously, but to have our own studio we bought a couple of years ago and not have to rent space or move our gear out, we would just leave it and come and go we wanted to. And it's that's the part that's been the most amazing season is, you know, pandemic aside, just having the time to go, yeah, I think we'll work on it tomorrow. Let's do this. And just taking our time. And it's like, I don't think there's retirement for musicians. This is the closest we get to retirement, is doing things the way that we wanted to and at our pace. And so it's been awesome. It's, yeah. And it's like, and it's to the point where I miss doing live shows, but we already, you know, we've already talked and said, man, we realize that we can do this for a year without any shows, and we made it. And so I bet we go down to 30 or 40 shows a year once we get back going, just because we like being home and we like picking and choosing. And you know, there's not doing a show to pay the bills is not a fun place to be. And so we just were like, that's not going to be our motivation.
I just think you dropped so much wisdom right there. Thank you for sharing that. For being so
sure.
Like, I just wonder how many people, like, fear is such a driver that if you stop doing the thing, mm-hmm. That you won't have any more value, or right. You maybe are making the assumption that the people that you're doing the thing for will cancel you. Mm-hmm. You'll be forgotten about, and right. You won't know who you are in the world. Yeah. I'm happy to hear you thriving, and happy in this season. You've given us so much joy. Your music always this is what we say on the radio station and the morning show. They did it again. You know, every time I hear a new Mercy Me song, it's like, they did it again. Just the most amazing, creative, winsome way have communicated something that we all needed to hear. Say I Won't just wrecks me. I've sent it to people, like shared it with people who I know were like going through, had a friend who'd been through a terrible time in a car accident and worked on her recovery. And I sent it to her. I send the song to people who are overcoming this great obstacle. Do you have a Say I Won't moment in your own personal life, Bart?
Yeah, I think most of this album is a Say I Won't moment from a standpoint of, like, people ask what the album's about. And for me, it's like, you know, as long as I can keep making music, you know, these, like I said, I feel like we had three albums, is that the message for me is going to be the same. It's like, we're tired of telling people to stop sinning. We just want to show them who they are in Christ and why we're just better for it. And to realize that, you know, that suffering is truly a gift, in my opinion. I mean, it's until you go through and kind of hit that rock bottom, it's hard to truly appreciate grace and forgiveness, which it's so crazy to think in our society right now, the most insane idea, you know, more than, all the political stuff and Black Lives Matter, whatever, the most insane idea is grace and forgiveness. That's like, that's not even on the table. And so, yeah, it's For me to say I won't was my biggest struggles is living in fear and then and not being able to let go of my past, which I'm sure a lot of people can relate to. And that's a lot of what this album talks about, is that you are not your guilt and your shame. You know, we're just trying to find clever ways to say the same thing on every record, is like, you know, it's in the past, let it go. Like, you are a new creation. You know, you're not, we do depravity so well and talk about how awful we are, but man, you have Christ in you. The same spirit that raised Christ from the dead dwells inside of you. So you used to be horrible. We're not anymore. And, you know, it's, I once was lost, now I'm found. And it's like, and we're so good at beating ourselves up. And there's so many messages on this album that address that. And so I feel like the whole album has been my say I won't, the things I need to be reminded of, and not letting fear, you know, overcome me and motivate and drive decisions that I make. And I'm not there yet, but I definitely have better days than others. And say I won't too. Like, we kind of jokingly, but there's a lot of truth to it. You know, we've written our fair share of what we call funeral songs, if you will. I've been consumed with heaven, to say the least. But this song is all about living every moment to its fullest. And I think that's something that certainly came out of this whole pandemic. You talk about like how, you know, it's realizing what's important and stop and just kind of like, just really just setting your mind on things that matter. And man, I mean, only a pandemic would make us literally stop and, you know, against our will at some point and just dwell on what matters. And like, uh-oh, what happens when I'm not, my dogs are going crazy. What happens when what I thought my identity was gets shut down? Who am I? You know, there's a lot of lonely, depressed people but at the same time, I think there's a lot of people that realize, man, there's more to me. There's more to this. There has to be more. Yes. My say I won't moment. I think my say I won't, if I had to put it in words, would be to learn to be very present and okay with it. And not just, you know, I love dreaming things up. It's one of my favorite things ever, and coming up with different ideas, but to the point to where, you know, where I don't realize that whatever ice cream my daughter and I are getting today is more important. And that's the thing. And so I'm learning I've been forced to learn that, and that's a good thing. And so that would be my say I won't, is just to be present to where the Mercy Me will be cutting back what we do, because I love where we are right now.
Mm-hmm. And you are so much more than Mercy Me.
Yeah, I hope so.
I just love this conversation so much. I hope that you can answer in the affirmative to that question, that you love where you are right now, and that you know without a doubt that you are so much more than what you do. Here with the Your Day Brighter Bright Spot, it's Bart Millard talking about priorities.
We'll probably cut back and do only about 40 shows a year, and just be home more and kind of be, you know, pick and choose our shows a little better. Cause you know, you do fall into the trap of just, if somebody asks, you just say yes. Cause you know, you don't know how much longer they're going to ask. And I'm like, yeah. And I kind of had that mentality, but then I was like, you know, but I do know that my kids are getting older and they're not going to be here that long. And so I think I'm going to lean on that side. So it's been very revealing of just that fear of, we can't stop working. And then when we are forced to stop and realize, hey, we're going to be okay. Like, it can't get worse than this, right? We're going to be okay. And so it's definitely changed our priorities, for the better by far.
And speaking of priorities, what kind of ice cream are you going to have today, Bart?
I don't know. It's probably going to be something. It's usually some butter pecan. I don't get too creative. Yeah.
Graters. If you've ever heard of Graters, it's a.
Yeah, totally.
Black raspberry chocolate chip.
Okay. All right. Yes. Yeah. All right.
Taking time for the simple things, right? Hey, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Your Day Brighter is produced by Tracy Tiernan and John Lohan for Brighter Media Group. Special thanks to our fabulous team, Todd Gaddy, Julie Gilligan, our amazing editor, Caroline Burke. You guys are the best. And so are you. We're so happy to have you part of our listening community. Please subscribe, follow, share, spread it around to anybody that you know needs a little encouragement, a little hope in their day. If you're able, leave a review, because that just helps people to find the podcast. And remember, tell somebody your story today, or better yet, ask to hear someone else's.